Well, thanks, Bob, and congratulations. And I almost feel like saying amen, hallelujah. You know, I know that Bob has the name of being the Reverend of Renewables, and you can see why. And it's great to be here to worship at the altar of renewables with you and to be part of the hallelujah chorus and feel this energy and enthusiasm. It's a great time to be part of things and you know, it's also a time that we really do need the message Bob gave you to pull together and set the record straight and get the right information out there. One of my favorite stories is about a young couple that were married for a short time. The young man had looked for a long time for what he considered the perfect woman. And he thought he had found her and quickly went through a whirlwind courtship and they got married. And he found that after the marriage went along that she wasn't exactly the person that he thought she was. And as time went on, he found that she was more and more interested in developing a lifestyle that she wanted to become accustomed to instead of contributing to their general lifestyle. This forced him to put in longer and longer hours of work in order to support her habits. And she grew in her habits of luxury and in size and other things. And one night he worked late and he came home and because he'd worked late, he'd forgotten their third wedding anniversary. And this was an opportunity for the wife to berate him quite severely. She pointed her finger at him and said, "How could you possibly forget our wedding anniversary? I better find something in the driveway tomorrow morning that does 0 to 200 in less than 6 seconds or you're out of here." So he went to bed with a heavy heart, slept on the couch, wondered what he was going to do. She heard him get up in the morning early and fumble around a little bit and leave. She stayed in bed, finally got up, and was curious to see what he would do to this challenge, how he would respond. She opened the curtains and looked out, and sure enough, there in the driveway was a nice box all wrapped in ribbon and paper. And she was pretty excited. She wondered whether there was a set of keys in there or a sales slip or what might be in there. So she threw on her robe, ran outside into the driveway and grabbed that box and brought it into the kitchen table and set it there, opened the ribbon, opened the paper, and there in that box was a bathroom scale. But I tell you that story because not everything that's in the box is exactly what we think it is. And with corn and ethanol, unfortunately, the box that we have out in the media and out in the public is not at all what's inside. And we have kind of the opposite story going on there. What I'm going to do is just spend a few minutes and tell you a little bit about some of the things that really are inside the corn ethanol business, some of the things we're doing to become more sustainable, and what I think is a really great story that's not being told, in fact, is being perverted. You know, 2007 was a good year, a very good year. Last year at this time, we were all sitting here wondering, can we produce enough corn? Can we meet the demands? The same things that we're going through this year. Can farmers put enough crop in the ground? And you know that it was a record year, 13.1 billion bushels, largest crop in history, an average yield of 151 bushel to the acre, second highest in history. And the way we use that corn this year, we're going to use 42% for feed, 22% for ethanol, 17% for export, strong export market. We're going to have 10% carryover. So we've done well, farmers have responded, and they will respond again this year. What I'm going to do is tell you a little bit about how we can meet the demand, this growing demand, and still meet all these needs, food, fuel, and export. Tell you a little bit how we're reducing inputs, and talk to you about what I consider a rational approach to sustainability. So there's three key steps to meeting demand. One is increasing corn production by boosting average yield. A second that the critics and the people who are the new experts in corn forget is that we're displacing some of that corn that goes for feed. You all know that. Bob mentioned that. And also this great story that's going on in your industry who are improving the efficiency to squeeze more ethanol out of the bushel of corn. You know, last year when we planted all that corn, there was a lot of criticism. We hadn't put that much corn in the ground since 1944. And there was a huge hue and cry that as if that was a bad thing. Well, I went back and put this chart together to compare 1944 with 2007. Both years, we had 85 million harvested acres. The average price in 1944 was $1.03. The average farm gate price in 2007 was $3.04. Those are USDA statistics. If you deflated that, actually the price was higher in 1944 than it was in 2007. But on that 85 million acres, we harvested 2.8 billion bushels of corn in 1944. And in 2007, we harvested 13.1 billion bushels. 33 bushels to the acre in 1944, 151 bushels to the acre in 2007. Now, in 1944, if you would have told farmers that they would be getting 151 bushels to the acre by 2007, they would have thought that you were using some of those corn squeezings for other things than ethanol. They would not have believed it. It just was incomprehensible. But I'll tell you that in the same time period or less, what we will be getting for average bushel to the acre will make that look light. These are three charts, a 35-year trend line, a 15 and a 10. You'll see that each shorter time period gets steeper. My argument, contrary to even what University of Illinois says, I think yields are increasing at an increasing rate because of the great technology that's going on in biotechnology and our hybrid and our marker-assisted production. This is a chart that Monsanto puts out. The green represents the trend, the actual corn production. The blue is trend line on a 30-year trend line. The lighter tan represents what they see as a step change going on because of marker-assisted breeding, our ability to put more, find those traits in a more efficient and effective manner because of things that are going on with genomics and that kind of scientific advancement. And the top line represents the next step change that's occurring because of biotechnology. You know, we have more commercial application of biotechnology in corn than any other crop, and we're just beginning. There's lots of exciting things in the pipeline. What Monsanto says is that by the year 2030, we will have a national average yield of 300 bushels to the acre. That's double what we had last year. That's pretty exciting. That's double what we're getting on the same amount of acres. That's part of this change that's going on. Well, you know what's going on with again, the critics forget that we don't use all the corn for ethanol. We project that by 2015 we'll be displacing about 1.5 billion bushels of corn in feed channels with dried distillers grains, and that goes back into that supply equation. You know what's going on in your industry in terms of efficiency in ethanol production, getting more out of a bushel of corn, so we're getting more bushels or gallons per acre. This is a slide that Pioneer DuPont puts out that's pretty dramatic. It shows with the increase in yield, with taking some of that fiber components from the new technologies in ethanol production, right now we're getting about 435 gallons of ethanol per acre, according to them. And they're suggesting that by 2020, which is not all that far away, we'll be getting 1,000 gallons per acre of ethanol because of these trends, because of these changes. So going from 435 to 1,000 gallons an acre, pretty dramatic story. The critics look in the rearview mirror. This industry is looking ahead. We're looking at where the headlights are going, and things are changing. You can't judge the future by the past in this industry because things are changing too rapidly. I put this little chart together with some help from Martha Schlichter and others. It looks at actual numbers for 2002, 2006, 2007, harvested acres, yield, our total corn supply, what's being displaced by DDGs, what our ethanol per acre rate is, and what our yield is. And my point is, there are three key components I think the critics neglect to see. Number one is that increasing yield per acre. Number two is the displacement of DDGs. And thirdly is the increase in the amount of, or the gallons of ethanol per acre. You put those three trends together, and the bottom line down there in red is the amount of corn that's available for things other than ethanol. And you can see that not only are we increasing the ethanol, we go to 15 billion gallons in that chart by 2015. We're also increasing the amount of corn available for food, feed, and export. We are not neglecting those other markets. We can do this, just as Bob said, we can do food, feed, and export. There does not need to be a conflict. You see these kinds of political cartoons. I think this topic is one of the ones that is most onerous to me when I see the critics saying that we're taking food out of the mouth of the hungry poor. Starvation is a very serious issue. We have had starvation with us for a long time. We had it when we had piles of corn sitting here in 2005, 2004, 2006. To suggest that biofuels are taking food out of the mouths of the hungry poor, to me, is almost immoral to be making that statement. Just as one example of the complex issues that are behind starvation, I pulled an article Sunday out of the Parade magazine. Let me just read this to you. It says, a new report from the International Rescue Committee says that the death toll in the Congo has risen at an alarming rate. Some 45,000 people die there each month from violence, disease, and hunger. In the last decade, over 5.4 million people have died, more than five times the number killed in the Darfur region of Sudan. These casualties are the result of civil war, lack of stable government, and collusion of warring factions. We cannot underestimate the impact or the tragedy of hunger, but to put it on the back of biofuels is morally wrong and a gross oversimplification, and something that I think is very onerous, and we need to fight very strongly against those kind of characteristics. Our exports are up this year. We should set a new record in exports. Our exports were up last year over the previous year. We are not cutting back what we're doing, our commitments to the international marketplace. You know, one of the other things, and Bob alluded to this, is the food versus fuel. And again, you, like me, believe this does not need to be a food versus fuel. It's food and fuel. If you look at the value of corn in retail food items, you can see this chart up there at $2.40. There's 3 cents worth of farm gate corn in a box of over $3 cornflakes at $4 a bushel, which is the average price in that range that USDA projects for this year. There's 4 cents worth of corn. That does not justify the headlines, the significant increases that people are blaming on the cost of corn. It just is not reality. In fact, when you spend a dollar on food, farmers only get 9% of that. The things like transportation and marketing and labor costs are significantly higher proportions of that. So only 9 cents of that dollar goes back to the farmer. You know, the next thing I want to talk about is reducing inputs per output. You've seen these kind of cartoons too, and again, something that I think is a tremendous story, those of you who know agriculture and the things that are happening with the changes in crop production, to be twisted around and turned into these kinds of messages at the national level, again, is a travesty. The facts don't support this. This is the trend line in pesticide and herbicide use in corn production. Trend line is moving very significantly downward. This is because of the biotech revolution. Farmers are using less of these products in producing corn. When you look at fertilizer, there's been big headlines about that, pretty dramatic. We have actually decreased our use of total fertilizer since 1980. It's down by some 10%. Our output per input is increasing pretty dramatically. Those charts, those bar charts on the bottom, are showing for nitrogen, phosphate, and potash, the units in per units out, the amount of bushels we get out per units in, the efficiency rate. Those pounds of fertilizer in total are going down, and those that are going on the ground are producing more bushels. This is not being wasted. It's not being washed down the Mississippi River. $800 a ton, why would a farmer want that to happen? The dramatic trends going on in conservation tillage, I hope you're all aware of these. This has been a great success story, again, driven by biotechnology and new techniques and new equipment. Our no-till trends are increasing. That's leading to less soil erosion. The energy balance. You know, you look at all the studies that are out there. If you put this in this graphic form, again, our units of energy in, our units of energy out, you can see the ones that are below the line that are negative, the ones that are above the line. If you look at the ones below the line, a little bit incestuous, some of the same names there, a little bit ironic, but yet those are the ones that the media focuses on. Let's talk about water a little bit. You know, you've seen the statistics, 4,000 gallons of water to produce a bushel of corn, and 3 to 4 gallons of water to produce a gallon of ethanol. You multiply that, you're at 12 to 15,000 gallons of water for 1 gallon of ethanol. That's what you read in the headlines in the media. And that is pretty scary. But you know what the media doesn't tell you is that 87% of our corn is not irrigated. That's rainfall. It's going to fall on the golf course. It's going to fall on the parking lot. Whatever that land is, it's going to fall. And if it's corn, it's going to create bushels of corn. If it's alfalfa, it's going to create alfalfa. They don't bother to tell you that. They make it sound like we're pumping that out of the ground. In fact, another thing they don't tell you is corn gives off water. An acre of corn gives off 4,000 gallons of water a day in transpiration. I'm told that if you captured that over a growing season, it would make a lake on that acre 11 inches deep. We're actually putting water into the atmosphere. And if you do some little bit fancy number crunching like the media does, we actually are a net contributor in water. We put out more water into the atmosphere by that 87% of the acres that are not irrigated as compared to the 13% that are pumping water out of the ground. You take the same statistics that account for the 4,000 gallons per bushel. Those are USGS figures. They also tell you it takes 62,000 gallons to produce a ton of steel, 28,000 gallons to produce a ton of beet sugar, and one that I want you to think about tonight at the reception, 1,500 gallons to produce a barrel of beer. More perspective. The one I like, 150 gallons to produce an average Sunday newspaper. We use 300 million gallons of water a day to produce newsprint. I'm not sure it's worth the trade-off. Well, some comments on the land use controversy. Bob mentioned that. This one just floored me when I saw this, that people could actually follow that, make that logic, make those A equals B equals C equals D. We're tearing out the rainforest because of biofuels. These are some of the comments from Bruce Dale at Michigan State University. Michael Wang's made some really good comments. I contacted, one of the things that really bothered me about this is for how many years those of us in agriculture have been hearing about all the extra land that's down in Brazil that can come into production and how they're going to eat our lunch. And why would they need to be taking out the Amazon rainforest when they have all this land in the Cerrado and the Pantanal and elsewhere? I contacted someone I respect very much down in Brazil and said, what's really going on down there? These are some of his comments. He wrote back to me and he said, Brazil can produce twice as much grain and ethanol as it now produces today without clearing another hectare of land down in the Amazon rainforest. And I said, what's going on with the deforestation in the Amazon? And this is a quote from him. Deforestation is driven by the hypocrisy of those that shout about saving the Amazon forest but are willing to pay a fortune for Amazon hardwood for their buildings, homes, and furniture. If trade in hardwood is prohibited, the deforestation will stop. The Amazon deforestation has nothing to do with biofuels. It's all about lumber trade. And people that jump to that conclusion are misinformed. You know, I read just last week about bees. Now they're blaming the decline in bees on biofuels. And in a way, we have to be flattered that almost every problem we have in the world, you're responsible for. Somebody has to take responsibility. You did it. All right? Big shoulders. Speaking of the bees, it reminded me of a little saying I remember when I was in elementary school, that bees are very busy souls. They have no time for birth control. That's why there are so many sons of bees. And I think they're all now writing newspaper headlines. So let me talk to you about a rational approach to sustainability. We and a number of other groups have gotten together about 18 months ago to try and figure out how do we get some definition to this word. Sustainability is kind of used like a blunt instrument on people, and different people use it different ways. The names on the screen are 20-some groups that got together and said, let's put some definition to this. You'll see environmental groups there, you see some retail firms, you see producer groups, you see some suppliers. It's quite a diverse group, very powerful because it goes across the whole value chain. And we've come together, and we have some academic community as well that are involved, and looked at something. What we want to do is push that curve. Move best practices. And it's a trend that's already going on in agriculture, but how do we enhance that? We put some definitions. Sustainable agriculture will meet the needs of the present while improving the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. We're increasing output by decreasing inputs is one of the basic measures. We have some tools we're working on, some best management practices, some sustainability indexes, some tools that farmers can use to measure themselves, where they can pick up new practices, where we can be constructive in dealing with this term. We can build on the trends that are already happening there and reflect this in a more constructive way. And I think this is the way we ought to be looking at sustainability. These kind of outcomes, these kinds of things that make sense. We have a tremendous story in this industry. You know, they look at the trends that are going, the trends in the basic germplasm, the optimization of corn production, the yield enhancements, the traits that are going on there, the things that you're doing in your industry to be more effective, more efficient, both in terms of environment and energy efficiency, goes all the way up the value chain. So the trends are moving in the right direction, and it's a very exciting story. That's why it's so sad that it's being turned around and misinformed in the media. Again, I want to go back to this chart that I put up before. The three trends that I think the general public misses: the yield increase, the increase that's going on in your industry and squeezing more gallons out of your inputs, whether it's corn or whatever it is, and the DDG displacement. The story looking forward is not the story looking back, and too many people are looking back instead of looking ahead. I think there has been an organized campaign to smear my industry and your industry together. Facts are misused. They're selectively used. We can meet our food and fuel needs here in the United States and make a significant contribution around the world. There is a significant contribution to the environment, to the economy from this industry. All of us need to work together to get that story and get it told well. Thank you very much.